Sisyphus. Brotherly love. The eternal punishment Sisyphus endures in Hades has also entered language and lore, but there is much more to his story than the famous stone he is doomed endlessly and fruitlessly to push uphill. Sisyphus was a wicked, greedy, duplicitous, and often cruel man, but who cannot find something appealing, heroic even, in the unquenchable zest and fist-shaking defiance with which he lived, in fact, outlived, his life? Few mortals dared to try the patience of the gods in so reckless a fashion. His foolhardy contempt and refusal to apologize or conform put one in mind of a Grecian Don Giovanni. Deucalion and Pyrrha, the survivors of the great flood, had had a son named Helen, after whom the Greeks to this day call themselves Hellenes. Helen's son, Aeolus, had four sons, Sisyphus, Salmoneus, Athamas, and Cretheus. Sisyphus and Salmoneus hated each other with as visceral and implacable a hatred as the human world had yet witnessed. Rivals in their parents' affections, rivals in everything, from the cradle, neither could bear to see the other succeed. The two princes outgrew their father's realm of Aeolia, as Thessaly was called in those days, and moved east to found their own kingdoms. Salmoneus ruled over Elis, and Sisyphus established Ephyra, later called Corinth. From these fastnesses, they glared at each other across the Peloponnese, their bitter enmity growing with each passing year. Sisyphus hated Salmoneus so much it robbed him of his sleep. He wanted him dead, dead, dead. The desire was so agonizing, he stabbed himself repeatedly in the thigh with a dagger to relieve himself of it. But there was nothing he could do. The Furies would avenge themselves terribly if he dared murder a brother. Fratricide was among the worst of the blood crimes. Eventually, he decided to consult the oracle at Delphi. "Sons of Sisyphus and Tyro, rise to slay Salmoneus," intoned the Pythia. This was sweet music to Sisyphus's ears. Tyro was his niece, daughter of his hated brother Salmoneus. All Sisyphus had to do was marry and get sons from her, sons who would rise to slay Salmoneus. Uncles could marry nieces without raising any eyebrows in those days, and so he set about beguiling and seducing Tyro with horses, jewels, poems, and oceans of personal charm, for Sisyphus was nothing if not captivating when he chose to be. In due course, his wooing won her. They wed, and she bore him two bouncing boys. One day, some years later, Sisyphus was out fishing with his friend Melops. Sunning themselves on the banks of the river Cythas, they fell into conversation. At exactly the same time, Tyro set out from the palace with a maid, the two boys, now aged 5 and 3, and a hamper of food and wine, with the idea of surprising Sisyphus with a family picnic. Back on the river bank, Melops and Sisyphus talked lazily about horses, women, sport, and war. Tyro's group made their way across the fields. "Tell me, sire," said Melops, "it has always surprised me that, despite your bitter feud with King Salmoneus, you chose to marry his daughter. For all that I can tell, you still dislike him as much as ever." "Dislike him? I abominate, loathe, despise, and abhor him," said Sisyphus with a loud laugh. A laugh that allowed the approaching Tyro to draw a bead on his exact position. As her party drew nearer, she could now hear every word her husband spoke. I only married that bitch, Tyro, because I hate Salmonea so much, he was saying. You see, the oracle at Delphi told me that if I had sons by her, they would grow up to kill him. So when he dies by the hand of his own grandchildren, I will be rid of my vile pig of a brother without fear of the pursuit of the Erinyes. That is... Melops tried to find the word. Brilliant? Cunning? Ingenious? Tyro checked her sons, who were about to run to the spot from which they could hear their father's voice. Turning them round, she pushed them at speed towards a bend in the river, the maid following behind. Tyro had swallowed Sisyphus's charm whole, but she loved her father Salmoneus with a loyalty that overrode any other consideration. The idea of allowing her sons to grow up to kill their grandfather was out of the question. She knew how to defy the oracle's prophecy. "Come, child," she said to the eldest, "look down at the stream. Can you see any little fishes?" The small boy knelt on the river bank and looked down. Tyro put a hand to his neck and pushed him under. When he had stopped struggling, she did the same to the youngest. "Now," she said quite calmly to the traumatized maid, "this is what you will do." Sisyphus and Melops caught plenty of fish that afternoon. Just as the light was fading and they had started to pack up for the day, Tyro's maidservant appeared before them, bobbing a nervous curtsy.
"Beg pardon, Majesty, but the Queen asks that you might greet the princes. They are by the riverbank awaiting your Majesty, just behind the willow tree, sire."
Sisyphus went to the place indicated to find his two sons lying stretched out on the grass, pale and lifeless. The maid ran for her life and was never heard of again. Tyro, by the time the enraged Sisyphus had reached the palace with drawn sword, was safely on her way to her father's kingdom of Elis. On her arrival home, Salmoneus married her to his brother Cretheus, with whom she was deeply unhappy. Salmoneus himself, quite as proud and vainglorious as his hated brother, had set himself up in Elis as a kind of god, claiming to equal Zeus's power to summon storms. He'd ordered the construction of a brass bridge, over which he liked to ride his chariot at breakneck speed, trailing kettles, cauldrons, and iron pots to mimic the sound of thunder. Flaming torches would be thrown skywards at the same time to imitate lightning. Such blasphemous impertinence caught the eye of Zeus, who ended the farrago with a real thunderbolt. The king, his chariot, brass bridge, cooking utensils and all were blasted to atoms, and the shade of Salmoneus cast down to eternal damnation in the darkest depths of Tartarus.